Let me share with you first something about who I am, then we will proceed with the topic of our discussion. My name is Fred Rajan. I was born and raised in India. I grew up as a Lutheran, thanks to the Danish mission work in my part of the world. My missionaries came to the area where I grew up in 1706, long time ago, before we were all born here. I grew up, when I was growing up, the only church I knew was the Christian church, and that happens to be the Lutheran. And there is, I never met a Hindu, unlike when the high school, because the picture you get about, I want to share that because the picture we get about a country like India is dominantly Hindu, yet you see this. But the when the missionaries came, since they were part of the colonizing forces which are coming to the part of the world, they also divided the part of the area where they will work. So, yeah, significant part of the country was given to the Lutheran missionaries. So the all the churches in that area were all Lutheran, and that's where people were in. So I grew up in that environment, and my father was a coal mine worker. So I grew up in the townships. I remember now, after I came to this country, knowing about all the dangers about asbestos, I remember the first time we lived in a house built of coconut palm leaves, and they first put a roof up there because when the rain in the monsoon season, it just rains like crazy. So they put asbestos sheet. That we thought that is the luxury we got in our life. You know? And I got scholarships to go to college. That's the only reason I was able to enter into college. And then I did my bachelor's and master's degree in economics. And then I went to work for a student Christian movement, which is a campus ministry of World Council of Churches. And then I came to this country and I went to seminary here. And then I was pastor in Texas, and then I came to work for the Churchward offices here in Chicago. I worked for the Commission for Multicultural Ministries. Now, that's a brief introduction to who I am. How many of you are here in this room Lutheran? God, there's a whole Lutheran bunch. Thank you. The reason I'm asking that is when I was in Texas, those of you who know, anybody lived in Texas? All right, two people. That's what you are. So I cannot lie to you all. I know that. You hardly see any Lutheran around there. I was a, this is a honest to goodness truth. I was a hospital chaplain in a hospital called Herman Hospital in Houston. One day I went to see this patient, and when I went to see her, first she was in shock. She thought, I'm a Hindu priest or something. And I said, that's the first thing she wanted to know, that I was a Christian. I said, yes, I am. And then we began to talk, and then she wanted to know whether I'm a priest. I said, no, I am not. I'm a pastor. She got more confused. And she's from Baton Rouge, Louisiana. And then she wanted to know who I am. And then I said, I'm a Lutheran. She literally jumped out of the bed. She said, you Lutheran? I said, yeah. I said, what? I want to know what's wrong with Lutherans. She said, I am a Catholic all my life. I know about Lutherans. I never thought I would get to meet a Lutheran priest. I said, what's wrong about being a Lutheran? He said, do you know about Martin Luther? I said, yeah, I know about Martin Luther. And we grew up together. And she said, she said, I learned about Martin Luther when I was going to school. You know what that man did? He raped all the nuns. That's why they threw them out the Catholics. And that's why the Lutherans came. Now you come to see me? You know, so she was in shock. And I never went to see her again. And so that's why I wanted to make sure the which crowd I'm talking to, you know, because when you're talking about Lutherans, I wanted to make sure how many Lutherans are here. So, since you all know me now, and I know who majority of you here are Lutherans, and I think we are ready to roll. Let me share today with you on the focus of multicultural church in three areas. I will touch very briefly on the three. What it means to be a multicultural church in a biblical and theological and sociological perspectives. And depending upon the mood you are in and how attentive you are, my presentation may last anywhere from 3 minutes to 30 minutes. How about that?
Are you still a hospital chaplain in Houston?
No. Now I work in Chicago for the ELCA Churchwide office, the national headquarters.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, I got a promotion.
And you weathered the cuts.
That's right. When we moved to Chicago, right in the middle of winter, moving from a guy from India living in Texas and moving from Dallas to Chicago in the middle of winter is no fun. That is crazy. Maybe it will. When the ELCA came into existence at the Constituting Assembly, it made some intentional efforts. At least in the Constitution, it used the word multicultural church several times. It also set a goal that within 10 years of its existence, the church will become at least 10% African American, Asian, Hispanic, and Native American people. At the present time in the ELCA, you all know what ELCA is, right? ELCA is around 1.87% of the membership is African American, Asian, Hispanic, and Native American. In number wise, ELCA has 5.3 million members, the whole ELCA. And out of this, around 100,000, close to 100,000, are African American, Asian, Hispanic, and Native American people. So you're talking about a very small segment of the total membership. Of this, around 50,000 plus are African American, around 20,000 are Asians, and around 22,000 are Hispanic, around 5,000 are Native American. So that gives you a flavor how small the membership is. So the church has set a goal that it really wanted to become multicultural. Now, bear in mind there are other terminologies. There is cross-cultural, the church would have used, but it was very intentional in using the word multicultural. We will talk about that later, why we use the word. And also, the church never said that we wanted to become 10% African-American, Asian, Hispanic, and Native American. He said we wanted to become 10% persons of color, or primary language other than English. Again, what the goal was to see that we will grow together as one community, not as separate partners. The question has been asked ever since the whole question of multicultural church idea came, whether it is really an achievable goal. In fact, when I came about to work for the ELCA, my job at the time was, I was the associate director for advocacy for the church. And then when, at 89, a year of the church being in existence, they wanted a staff person to do the work full-time to develop a plan to achieve the 10% goal. So, I was asked to head up the department. And when I got there, when I was asked to do that, and they told me, they asked me to prepare a plan how we wanted to achieve the 10% goal, and also they asked me whether I really wanted to do this. So I talked to several of my friends, including Jody Christman, who is here, and said, should I do this? And I got a very tough advice, anyway, but go for it, listen, we can do some, make a difference to. We don't want you to get crucified for this. And because the realities are there, that is, we will have an uphill battle. When I came aboard to do this work, I looked at this in three areas. One is, we wanted to look at the whole ELCA structure and organization and see how we can impact it. Number two, we wanted to see whether this is really an achievable goal in terms of demographics. That was encouraging because 21% of the US population is African American, Asian, Hispanic, and Native American. And the populations where a significant number of African American, Asian, Hispanic, Native American is very relatable, much closely related to where the ELCA is going, emphasizing its ministry. That 70% of the ELCA congregations are sitting in predominantly those communities. So there was this encouragement. The third area I wanted to look was develop a plan where we will impact every aspect of the church's ministry and see, make it truly a multicultural church, so that one day there don't need to have even a commission for multicultural ministries to fight for the issues which affect the four communities. Now, why we began to think about church becoming multicultural? Where does this idea come from? This has been a question in many of our minds. He says, many times I travel or I go for meetings, people will ask, who came up with this idea? Why there is a... I remember one time I was in Washington, D.C. I met with some of the membership in congregations. We had an evening forum, and one gentleman stood up and he said, I'm sick and tired of this church spending all this money for colored people. That's the word he used. And well, he has got the right to say that. And then we began to talk about that. And I will tell you that he was one of our strong supporters now than before. What he thought was that a whole bunch of people got together who happened to be African Americans, Hispanic, and Native American nations. And they said, the church has to become multicultural. The church has to spend more money for us. The church has to do service for us and all the stuff. That is what he thought. So he said, I'm going to fight tooth and nail because this is my church. I said, fine, but let me explain to you what happened. First of all, when we think about the Lutheranism in Lutheranism, we had to define which Lutheranism we are talking about. Are we talking about Lutheranism, or are we talking about Lutheranism as expressed in North America? If you look at Lutheranism as expressed throughout the world, and our Lutheranism as it is, you have to deal with close to 4.5 million Lutherans living in Asia, close to 5 million Lutherans living in Africa, close to 1.5 million Lutherans living in Central and South America. And when the Lutheranism is declining its membership in Europe, the Lutheranism is one of the fastest growing denominations in Africa. It is growing like wildfire. There are pastors who are serving 10 and 12 congregations, one pastor serving 10 and 12 congregations because there is not enough pastor leadership. Lutheranism has been identified with a church which is committed to the gospel, which is expressing the gospel very forcefully and rightly to the needs of the people. The Lutheranism, if you look at in Europe, is pretty much a dying church or a dead church. The numbers, you know, if you look at East Germany, we have around 15 million Lutherans. One day you hear, next day they say, well, it may not be 15 million, probably around 4 million. And if you look at the church attendance, probably it will be less than 3 or 4 million. So what is happening is that there is a reshaping of Lutheranism, and Lutheran theology is happening throughout the world. In fact, some of the beautiful publications and theological discourses which are coming out today in the Lutheranism, we find not in Europe, but coming from Africa, more than any other continent. So that is happening globally. In North America, we never became a North American Lutheran church. We still been the Norwegian Lutheran church, the Swedish Lutheran church, and the Danish Lutheran church, and that is fine, but if we can admit to that, fine and dandy. But we have not, but we try to put new flavors to that. We call it American Lutheran Church, or a Lutheran Church in America, now Evangelical Lutheran Church in America. But what I am proposing here is, at least the persons of color in the church are those who are seeing the church as a North American church. We are forcing the church to look at itself, say, become a North American church. Wherever you are, become a North American church. Be truthful to your environment God has called you to be. And also develop a theology which is relevant to the culture or the community you are called to serve. Now we do not have one. We can say what is our Norwegian Lutherans has to say in this country, or the Danish Lutherans has to say in this country. When the Constituent Assembly, it was very interesting. Some of us were sitting there and talking, and this is how all the elections were happening. And most of the friends who were with us at the time were white brothers and sisters, and they had a pretty good idea of who is going to do what. They were saying, the Germans will still control the seminaries, the bureaucrats will be go to the Swedes. You know, that it was all right in line, right there. And so that is the way we are. That's the way the church has been. Now, what's the story about the Lutheranism in North America, especially in the United States of America? The Lutheranism came to this part of the world, at least in, I would say, 1623. Professor, don't you think that's the right number?
Okay. That's good.
All right.
Let's count like Eric's comment. He was pre-Luther.
1623. By 1742, there were around 15,000 Lutherans in this in the United States, and today there are around 9 million Lutherans live in the United States. In the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America alone, we have more than 11,000 congregations. We have more than 17,000 pastors with 5.3 million members and with 400 missionaries and work happening in 45 different countries, with 1.2 million children in the Sunday school, with 160,000 Sunday school teachers faithfully teaching those children. So these are our strengths. The reason I'm throwing out these numbers is we are not talking about little church trying to figure out its theology. Here you are, a very large denomination with strong impact on this country, and also its culture and its direction. We are not doing our job. We are closet Christians. And it reflects very much with the theology with which we grew up. That is, and also the understanding of what theology is. For our discussion's sake, I will define this. Theology and evangelization are two interrelated aspects of life and mission of the Christian faith. To me as a Christian, to me as one who grew up in a country where Christianity is a minority religion, and out of the Christianity, the Lutheranism is a much smaller number. If you again the numbers, see that what happens when you study economics, you love numbers. Of the 850 plus million population in India, close to 16 million or 20 million are Christians. Out of 20 million Christians, close to 1 million are Lutherans. So you are talking about the minority of the minority. To me, you cannot separate both evangelization and theology. They close in hand. Here in this continent, we separate both of them, right? We say theology is the study of faith, and so theologians is their study. And the evangelism, we see it as a process where we communicate your faith. That is done by this little peons, right? That's how it happens all the time. And I used to be a parish pastor, and so I understand that. And also I know a lot of my colleagues who are parish pastors always say that. The pastors think about latest involved in the church on only one occasion. You know when is that? Talk about evangelism. What do they say? Let's get the lay committee here. Lay folks here. Let's go and evangelize. See, that's the only time we say about evangelism. So we never think of them as together. We see them separately. We see the doing theology as given to a select core of people who will critically analyze their faith and do their thinking. Whereas we see evangelism in this continent as assigned to people who are willing to spend their time spreading their own personal faith. Never link both of them together. We are very proud of our Lutheran heritage. We say our Lutheran theology is great. But we say, a very exclusive theology. It's not for everybody, right? And I think that reflects in the number of membership we have in the church. My mind wanders around, so I got to have everything in kind of outline, so you will not get lost. Let me share with you, then I will shut up my mouth. One thing, when I was a parish pastor, I used to say that I hated preaching, but I loved Sunday school class. Because at Sunday school class, you can make sure nobody is sleeping. You wake them up. But if you're preaching, you can't do that. I want the member to come back to the church next Sunday, you know. So I keep your motion. And also, having an accent is one strength for me. That is, If you really want to know what I'm saying, you cannot close your eyes, you gotta read my lips. That's George Bush and I have in common. Let me share with you one beautiful biblical story. It very much tells us what we are about and what God expects us to do. That is the story of the Samaritan woman. Anybody who doesn't know Samaritan woman's story? You're all good Christians. You must be good Lutherans. All right. Jesus was had a little controversy with the Pharisees about baptism. One thing I learned about reading John's gospel, fourth gospel, the first few verses, is that many times when you have also had to deal with controversy, at times it may be a good idea to back off, go on your own way. And that's what Jesus was doing. Here he is encountered with some issues of baptism with Pharisees, and he thought, this is time to move on. So he was on the way to Galilee from Judea, and the best route to go was, the shortcut was to go to Samaria. So here he was going with his disciples to Samaria. On the way, he was thirsty and he stops, and here comes this woman to the well to get water, and he asks, the disciples have gone to get some food, and this poor man begins to talk to this woman. Very simple story if you look at that in the outset. But if you look at what has happened in this brief encounter, it puts us in a different direction, even the way the church ought to go. Number one, there's a lot of prejudice about this, about the whole Samaritans. The Jews hated them with a passion, mainly because here is a community which has given its culture because of the occupation of the because they were intermarrying with people and they have not kept their own cultural integrity. Very much an issue which the folks in North America is dealing with. Number two, the whole question of talking to your woman. It's interesting, when I was trying to figure out some interesting things to share with you, I came across this word called bruised and bleeding Pharisees. You know who they are? I don't know whether it's true or not, but I read this in one of the commentaries who said that the Pharisees, some of them, they believe they should not ever look at a woman. So when they saw a woman coming on the street, they would close their eyes. So if you want to walk around with eyes closed, they bump into walls and trees, and they're bruised and bleeding. That's another bruised and bleeding Pharisees. So if you found anybody walking around in this place, with bruised and bleeding, probably there may be one of the Pharisees walking around. And so that's the second issue Jesus was addressing when he is talking to a woman who is a Samaritan woman, and he is first of all willing to deal with her one-on-one, and number two, he could recognize her, a woman, as a sister, and ask for help. Number three is moral issue. It's the moral majority is gone now and out of business, so we cannot joke about them. But that is our society, that's especially the church. It always deals with the moral issues. I do not say that the church has to give up its responsibility to address moral issues, but at times it goes further than addressing the moral issues, but it becomes barriers between God's creation one with another. But here Jesus could look at this woman who by all accounts is a sinner and still use her to proclaim the gospel. Guess what she goes? She goes to the village, tells everything what she has seen, and tells everybody, I have seen the Messiah. And the town people gather around Jesus and tell him, don't go, stay here, do the work. And that's what probably Jesus is telling us, the same thing. If we as a church have to grow, if we as a church has to proclaim the gospel, we have to overcome those barriers. And these stand in the way of us becoming a true church in North American context. And it will take a lot of effort. I would say We have to respect all cultures. We have to give them the proper place. The moment we begin to say that I love my culture, we also say, I want to know about another culture. Number two is leadership issue. Leadership is number one issue in the church. Today we have the issues which confront the church more than ever because our society is changing. Our needs are changing. Our understanding of leadership is changing. And this is the time the church has to provide a strong leadership. Number three, we should be willing to give a public and personal witness to our faith. Many times we shy away from that. And if we do not do that, this church will perish. Even though the numbers may tell us that Evangelical Lutheran Church, in America especially, is in a very healthy state. But in my opinion, it is not. Of course, the offering is up. Last year, the offering is up to local congregations, $80 million. That's a big jump in giving. But that means that the congregations are aging. That's the primary reason. We do not have much children. We have more young adults and more people in the workforce. And that is making the difference in giving, more giving. Whereas, if you look at the numbers, even though this past year, the parochial reports tell us that there was indeed a slowing down of the membership decline. We used to have around 30 to 35,000 every year declining in membership in the Lutheran Church. ELCA, for the first time from our 1989 parochial, it will say that the declining has slowed down to around 15,000. So everybody thought that's great. But if you look at the real figures, what has happened is a lot of congregations are sending in their parochial report as they did before, and the reporting has become more fair and more clean than before. And these are some other factors rather than real growth, because when you look at how many people were, how many adult baptism were in the Lutheran Church, we hardly, less than 5,000 adult baptisms. That meant that we are still growing out of baptisms, infant baptisms. And that is not a very healthy sign for a church when it wanted to grow. If you really wanted to grow, the adult baptism has to increase, which we are not seeing that. And so these are some of the factors which are really affecting our church. Now, finally, then I will shut up. How about that? Sociologically. The church has a potential to become multicultural. Why do I say that? Number one, the Lutheranism, contrary to popular beliefs, that it is a national church. It is not a national church. Those of you from Texas, you know, will agree with me that we will hardly see any Lutheran in Texas or Louisiana or Oklahoma. Lutheranism starts from New York, New Jersey, goes all the way to Pennsylvania, to Ohio, to Illinois, to Wisconsin, to Michigan, to Minnesota, to North and South Dakota, and then slowly dies down when it comes here. That's where we are. You know, you won't find any Lutherans in the Sun Belt states, in the southern states. But where the population shifts now, where the population is moving, it's moving to the Sun Belt. So if you really wanted to see the church grow, it has to position itself differently. We'll be in bad shape. Number two, the birth rate. The birth rate among the Lutherans is pretty much zero population growth, because we do not have very many people in the congregation with childbearing age. That is declining. And we are not seeing very many children which are coming to the church. So the potential is that there will be a declining in membership. Now, I need to make the one point very clear, because I don't want to come across to you as Lutherans are not having children. It is the population. You know, the childbearing is is significantly high among which ethnic community? Hispanics, number one. Number two is the African American. And these are the two communities which you are going to see the population grow steadily. Whereas the white population growth is, will be declining quite naturally. Number three, where we see the immigration. The Lutherans dependent on immigration. That's why we never believed in evangelism. We said, yeah, the ship is coming. Must be a big ship, you know, bringing more Lutherans in. So the ship came and we grew. Now the ship will stop coming. Now we have, the immigration is still coming. We are close to 1.5 million people immigrate every year to this country. But the immigration is coming from, number one, from
Southeast Asia.
Number two is Central and South America. Number three, that's a very small number from Africa. And that's you're talking about racism right there. And so these are the stuff which are happening. Now, if the church really wanted to grow, again, if they wanted looking for the boat, they look for the wrong kind of people there, you know? So that's another factor. So if you really wanted to see the church grow, you had to look at all these issues. The number four, the American society, especially I'm talking about North and South American society, our thinking, we are very individualistic. We are also think more creatively, and we'd like to see change. But the Lutheran church is stuck somewhere in the 18th century. You know, I think in the ELCA especially, people will give their life for this green book sitting there. They will say, that's the most infallible book in this planet than anything else. And as long as we have that attitude, we are not going to see any change. We are not going to see any change. If those of you who are here yesterday for the worship service, you cannot see that in your congregations. But we get excited, right? You know, everybody is enthused, and this is a great worship service, and especially when I'm in the fold, and every time I enjoy being part of the worshiping community. But when you go to the congregations, we don't find that stuff happening. And as long as there is this holding on to our antiques mentality, the church is going to become a museum. And these are some of the things the church has to look at very rather carefully and address that. Finally, if the church wanted to become a multicultural church, it not only should look at just growing in numbers, in ethnic membership, that's also a danger. Again, that is a monocultural church making a unilateral decision that we are going to grow in numbers. It cannot be that way. Whereas the church has to look at what are the barriers it has. That's why I shared with you all these big numbers at the beginning. We have 11,000 plus congregations, 18,000 plus pastors, and all these numbers. They are relevant and they are important for the church to look at. Look at the strength what we have. We have more than 11,000 congregations. Now, can we stop and look at that and say, what are the barriers now that stop on the way of us becoming multicultural church? Once we begin to look at that, then we will find out a whole bunch of stuff. Number one, leadership. Number two, worship. Number three, the resources. Our Oxford Fortress Publishing House publishes around 150 books alone a year, plus numerous booklets and Sunday school materials and bulletin inserts to bulletin covers to a whole bunch of stuff the church is doing. We had to, again, many times you had to look at them, you had to say, what is this? How come we ain't got any, you know, now so they began to talk about it, put everything in, at least they wanted to put a black child's picture on the bulletin cover. Now we are saying, no, that is not, you know, no, that's not really expresses what it means to be a multicultural church. When I read a piece, when a Hispanic person read a piece of paper, when a Native American person, say, take ownership to that. That type of resources the church has to do. It has to become a truly multicultural church, given in its resources. Another big stuff we hate to admit and address is racism, both in church and society. It is one of the biggest barriers which stand in the way of the church becoming multicultural. Unless and until the church is willing to address that, I do not think the church will ever become multicultural church. And the church also has to look at the type of decision making it does. Because we still tend to make decisions in our kitchens and closets. And that's where all the decisions are made. Then it was brought to the committees and things, and there, and you talk for 2 hours, but the decisions have already been made somewhere else, and it was imposed on people. That has to change in order for this church to become a truly multicultural church. Now, what I shared with you today is not a good news, but still I say, then you may wonder, then why in the heck this guy took this job? But I still believe there is hope. I do not give up hope very easily. And because I do believe in the rich theology of the Lutheran Church more than anything else. Let me close this with this story. When I was in India working for the student Christian movement, I came from a church called Arcot Lutheran Church, which is a Danish mission church. We have around 60 congregations with around 150,000 members. So it's a small denomination. I was involved in the evangelism efforts of the church, and I was going at the time in a bus from one city to another, and I was reading some papers for this meeting I'm going to. So this person who was sitting next to me, he's a Hindu. He turned to me, he said, "Oh, you are a Christian." I said, "Yes." And then we were talking, and so I shared with him one of the papers I was reading. So he said, "I never figured out these Christians." And he said, then he comes from the area where the predominant Lutheran, so he talked in terms of Lutheran. He said, "You believe," he said, "if I do a sin, I get to go to the temple, I get to pay for it now, I get to do some things for the sins I have committed. But to you Lutherans," because that's the Christian denomination he knew, he said, "you believe in justification by faith." He said, "You can do whatever you want." He said, "Say a little prayer, the God has taken care of you, and you just move on with your life." What he was basically telling me, you believe in a cheap grace, right? And but he did not understand fully what we believe. And then we began to talk. And I shared with him why I believe that God does forgive me, and it is not what I have done, and then who am I in this world? You know, I'm making sins all the time, like you are, but I do know that God, Christ died for me, and he saved me from my sins, and I am justified from my sins. That type of rich heritage we carry. And that is why the Lutheranism is a growing church in Africa, in Asia. It's because the church is really dealing with people's, our own sins, and also, it did not stop there. It also deals with the issues, daily lives, justice issues, affecting the people's living in those places. That is why the church is a militant church in those parts of the world, and it is a growing church. And I do believe that the Lutheran people here in this country, also the same Lutherans as I have experienced in Asia and as I have read in Africa. So that's why I have this hope. Number two, the hope I have is the future of this country. It is so fast changing, and it is not like the way it was before. And I do believe the pressure for the church is going to come not from within, but from outside. I can give you an example. Funding for my program and activities, a larger sum of money comes from AAL and Lutheran Brotherhood Insurance Company. It is sad in one time, and also it is encouraging, because who are their clientele? The Lutherans, right? They are scared than anybody in the Chicago of losing membership, because they are looking at the church and say, "We are declining in membership. If we go on this, we'll go out of business." So they are really want to see the church become multicultural and grow, not for any good intention. They are theological or confessional reasons, but they are monetary reasons. But that's where the pressure is going to come, even for the church. In fact, I can give you an example. The Lutheran Brotherhood gives out around $2 to $3 million a year for ELCA alone, for growth in mission activities. They have put Hispanic ministry as number one priority. mainly because they were saying that if you want really want to see that growth, that's what we should be doing. And they are emphasizing that. And it is a surprise to a lot of people in Higgins Road in Chicago, because they should be saying the same thing. But it is the force from outside which is making, telling the church to change. And today, 21% of the population of this country is African American, Asian, Hispanic, and Native American. And that is giving pressure to the church to see that if you really wanted to be a church in this North America, you have to think differently, you have to look at issues differently, and you have to be intelligent. You cannot still wait for the big boat to come. It's not coming anymore. And so these are some of the realities the church is facing. So there is hope. Hope not, probably not in the sense of the direction the church is going, but hope in the sense that the pressure is coming from somewhere else. I do believe that God uses all peoples, and God could use a Samaritan woman to proclaim the gospel, and God could use the AAL and Lutheran Brotherhood to proclaim the gospel. So, I will keep my mouth shut. Thank you for keeping awake and reading my lips all the way. Now, we can have discussion.
Question.
Yes, sir.
A few years ago, Bishop Tübingen wrote an article for the International Bulletin of Missionary Research, and the article led to a book later, Foolishness to the Greeks.
Greeks, yep.
But the article was entitled, Can the West Be Converted? Remember that?
Yep.
Do you believe the West can be converted? I hear you being very pessimistic about the church.
Right. I always struggle with being, person who I am, and a person who is Christian. I struggle with myself. And as a person as I am, I'm very pessimistic about the future of the church. As a Christian, I am very optimistic, even with my pessimism. Well, I can give you one example of even Leslie, because when I worked for Student Christian Movement, my office was in the diocese office of Church of South India, where he was the bishop. So we had office in the same place, and we fought along all the way, especially the Indian young militant youth hated Leslie Newbegin with a passion. That's a good example I can use, with a passion. And then he retired as a bishop, went to England, I think began to sit and think, especially when I read the book, Foolishness to the Greeks. If any of you have not read the book, I will highly recommend reading that book. It's called Foolishness to the Greeks. Yes, Erdman Publishing House, Leslie Newbegin. And I think he sat down and reflected, if the book, what he wrote in the book and what he experienced with that man for 2 years are day and night. And so that's what another example of pessimism and optimism. And I think that something happened in his life. He went back and he realized that what he saw in South India, where he was in, and what he saw in England are two different pictures. And probably that changed him. And even though that's not the answer you wanted, I just wanted to include that also in my response. And so there is, I think, the church here to, I do believe the church here to stay, and God does have control over the church, and it may be in the pits, and still God will pull this out. Yeah?
I have a question about Asian Americans, because I grew up and kind of survey Asian American churches, throughout the United States and wherever I go, okay? I know here, in speaking for example, Seattle, of all the denominations, the only denomination that is not representative of all Christian churches is Lutheran. It's the only lacking denomination. I've noticed that in the LA area, and I've noticed that in Detroit, where I've been, Pittsburgh, where I've seen, and those churches have mainly have become interdenominational, more kind of a community. Do you kind of know the reason for that? Am I wrong? Do I have a wrong impression that the Lutheran Church made no impact in Asia at all, and this is why the early immigrants of Asian immigrants to America have never become Lutherans? I have never grown up with an Asian, and never seen an Asian Lutheran.
I'll come back to you.
Yes. Well, I'm just saying, we're from Vancouver, British Columbia. There are three, I don't know where in Asia you're talking about, but we have three recent we formed mission congregations for recent immigrants from China and from Hong Kong, just recently formed. So there's
okay. So up in Canada, the sure has been in America.
Okay.
St. Fathers of Hmong congregation.
Yeah. Even Seattle, I can tell you, there is in Seattle we have a Chinese congregation in Federal Way. Mm-hmm. We have a Vietnamese congregation in Seattle.
Vietnamese Chinese.
Vietnamese.
Vietnamese Chinese.
Yes, mm-hmm. And then we had.
I wasn't really talking about congregations as such, because there are congregations. Mm-hmm. But I mean, as for example, growing up, I mean, there is a distinctly Japanese Baptist church you can go to. There's definitely a Japanese Methodist church you can go. A definitely distinct, congregation of Japanese Presbyterian. But there's never. I'm just talking about distinct. I'm not talking about individual spies of congregations. And most of them, if they have, I'm sure, spotted up as little. Here and there, congregation. But I'm talking about it being specifically a Lutheran church having an impact itself on the church.
Sure.
That's really what I meant, not just an individual small congregation. So it's from that. Hmm.
I do not know the real answer, Father, but I can tell you some. The past 2 years, that meant after ELCA came in existence, the reading you get from the parochial reports is the Asian membership in the ELCA is declining its membership. One of the primary reasons for that is the Asian Lutherans you find here, especially in the US and to a certain extent in Canada, are those people who have come here through the Lutheran Immigration Refugee Service settlement programs with congregations. So a lot of people who came here, especially Southeast Asians who are Lutherans, were sponsored by the Lutheran Immigration Refugee Service, mm-hmm. and they became part of a Lutheran congregation or so. They were members of. But the ministries never really took root with the Asian people, and they were not at all really stable in their ministries. The ministries with the Chinese, especially in this country, especially in United States, the Chinese ministry, you have to make the distinction between what happened here and what is happening in Canada. Canada has a very vibrant Asian ministry, especially with the Chinese. Whereas in the United States, the Chinese ministry was pretty much close to people coming from Hong Kong. Now, one of the reasons being that the ELCA predecessor such bodies where had mission work in China during the revolution, and when they left, they took also the native pastors with them. They were all brought into Hong Kong, and then later on, when they retired from Hong Kong, they came to the U.S. and they started the ministries. And it is not put down on an individual, but when you look at a person who is 60 or 70 year old coming to a new culture here, wanting to start a ministry, they are not going to. You need some vibrant young blood to do ministry like that. That's the reality. That's one of the reasons we are seeing a declining in membership. And that is a bigger issue for us. And also, the leadership is a big issue. We are not seeing as much of a young leadership coming out of, especially from the Asian communities. And these are some of the reasons even you will not see them involved in community activities or anything. They are very much isolated in their ministries. So your observation is very correct. Yeah.
Well, and what you say, I think, harkens back to what you said before about there is not a North American Lutheranism. Mm-hmm. There isn't generally a North American Lutheranism. There isn't an Asian North American Lutheranism. That there hasn't been enculturation or indigenization, whatever term you want to use. We just haven't done it. I'm really struck by your saying that you came out of the church that was founded by the Danish missionaries, because that's only 75 years later than what you say, the date you give for the beginning of Lutheranism in North America.
Yeah.
And I would be interested in your observations about the degree to which the Lutheran Church in India has drawn on its contextual culture in contrast to what's happened here. Is the church in India light years ahead?
Okay, I can I'll give you two answers to that, especially with, in terms of that will be very helpful, is looking at the Lutheran churches in India. I know a couple of people in this camp. I met one couple here who they grew up in India, and in one of the Lutheran missions. And I know somebody else also from the mission field in India. So what I'm saying is very correct. The Lutheran missionaries, including Missouri Synod missionaries who went to India, were very progressive in their thinking. And another thing, they quickly realized that if they really wanted to see a ministry grow in Indian context especially, they have to indigenize it. Because the Indian people, even though, like, look at the geography of India, it's like a subcontinent with so many different countries and cultures. I speak Tamil, I am from the southern part of India. If you go to, say, 120, 200 miles from my state, where they speak another language, another way of eating food, and way of dressing yourself, and everything, the culture is so different. So the culture is the one which is very important, which binds those people together. So the church has been that way. In fact, I grew up never ever knowing most of the European and North American hymns, because they were all Tamil hymns or Tamil music. Everything is that way. The same thing with Missouri Synod. It was very intentional in its work there, was make it very indigenous in its approach to ministry. Now, talking about here, I shared earlier about some of the struggles we have of not even having a North American Lutheran theology. I need to throw this one here before I forget. That is, recently, anybody here seminary faculty here? I got to have a bulletproof vest before I say this. There's a severe attack on the, especially on the ELCA, saying that we have not been very faithful to the gospel and the Lutheran confessional heritage and all this stuff. And they will attack all the pieces of paper coming from ELCA, the Sunday school curriculum materials and all the stuff, right? And every time they say, look at that, this is not ELCA, this is not Lutheran theology. And you may not ever heard this before, but I can tell you, next time you hear from anybody who say that, say, who has to be blamed for that? If there is a blame, who has to be blamed? If your child cannot read and write, went to school for 5 years, who has to be blamed? The teacher, right? The darn teacher didn't teach the kid very good. That's why the problem is. If all these professors, all this, Carl Bratton and Jensen, all these guys are screaming early, saying that, yeah, we ain't got a Lutheran theology stuff coming, because they got lousy theology, they didn't teach the kids right. And that's what the problem is, right? If you really look at that. So the, who has to be blamed? I think the ELC really wanted to say that all this faculty who are opposed to this, I think they got to take a 5-year moratorium on no salary. They will work free for the church to pay for all their sins, and they will really come up with a good North American theology, and then they'll see how it goes. That's our problem. So these guys, they blame about all the stuff which comes from the ELCA. Everything, all the Sunday school material is terrible, they are on Lutheran theology, but they are written by their students, right? Like you and I, you know, we went through them, yeah?
Their students might be smarter than their teachers.
That's right. Yeah.
I've kind of made an interesting observation, I think, that has occurred in the Asian American church. Uh-huh. I've noticed, though, growing up, though, there really had been a swing of cross denominations of all Asian American churches, it appeared to be from a liberal to a real strict gospel fundamentalism type, almost like the Southern Belt, and that had become a revival and more in the Asian. Could it be? And this is just a thought of mine. Could it be that maybe this is where the Lutheran Church had kind of been falling asleep, in that the swing itself, the emphasis, has been in the wrong place? Could that be possible?
Yes, that could be a possible. In fact, when he was sharing that, I was thinking about two countries, Indonesia and Papua New Guinea, which is both of them as very fast-growing Lutheran churches. Now, the reason being has to do with the type of work being done, and I do believe that if the church is faithful to the gospels, the church will grow. And we spend more time talk about, in the Lutheran church, talk about the theology which we do not understand in our context. That's what I mean. In our understanding. And as long as we are struggling with that stuff, we are not seeing, going to see anything. And what is the stuff which is going to excite you if we are going to talk about stuff which doesn't make any sense in your daily life? The stuff, the church will grow, which is happening in two of the Asian countries especially, on both where the church has been very actively involved in the life of the people. The church make more sense to you when you worship. So you want to go to the church to find peace in your world struggle.
Right.
When that is not happening, the church will not grow. Yeah.
When you were giving your statistics, you mentioned a number that seemed incredibly low for the number of missionaries. Was it 400
uh-huh.
in the ELCA?
Yes.
Now, why is that so low? Is it because the church is not encouraging
okay, good.
Missionaries? Or?
If you want to send one missionary from United States or from Canada to, say, Nigeria, the same amount of money we spend for this missionary, you can recruit 30 missionaries from anywhere from Africa and send them to Nigeria. So which is the best way for the church to handle is to go the second way, which is happening. That is why that one of the programs ELC is actively involved is a south-to-south exchange program, where they not only try to, ELC is not only sending missionaries to south, also trying to find people from the southern countries to go from one place to another and provide support. We do, ELC has spent around $25 million for missionary support. And with 400 missionaries, they are doing some key responsible work, but the trend towards is now is finding people from those countries. Again, you have to keep in mind that 30 years ago, say, I don't know why I picked Nigeria. Nigeria is an example. The enough school was not there, not much chance for theological education. So we have to send people here as teachers and pastors to do the work. Now, not only Nigeria, but all the developing countries have significantly high number of educated people who can do the work. So that is one of the reasons. And I think that's a good direction for the church to move.
I have a question.
Yeah.
How was the recommendations that you made up to the Lutheran Church received?
Well, at this time, this is what we are doing. We are drafting a proposal to the a plan to the Churchward Assembly, because the Constituting Assembly is the one who set the goal that within 10 years he wanted to increase 10% membership. So what we got to do is we got to take it to the Churchward Assembly and tell them these are the plans, these are the things we have to do in order to achieve the 10% goal. So now that's what I'm working on. When I started my work, I was skinny and I had a lot of hair in my head. And after coming up with working on this plan, my life fell apart. So now we are working on developing this plan. We have the first draft. We are circulating that to different people in the church and rewriting the stuff and getting more feedback. And we are refining that. We are taking that to the Churchward Assembly next year. So if you are a delegate to the assembly, please support the plan. Remember me. And that's called multicultural mission strategy. We're taking this plan to the assembly. After that get adopted, we are hoping that it will get adopted. We are praying that it will be adopted. We are sure that it's going to get adopted. And once that is adopted, then the whole ELCA will start implementing in other units. Then my job will be to making sure this is being done.
Is that going to be integrated into Mission 90?
Yes.
So it won't be a separate
no.
thing?
No.
Okay.
Yes.
I'm sure that, you know, when the plan is circulated, we'll all find out about it, but is it possible to actually have within congregations, within most congregations, a ministry that will minister to a number of cultures, or do we have to have separate congregations established for individual cultures.
Oh, okay. What we are thinking about, we are very, very much aware that if the church are to become multicultural, it has to happen in the place where, what I will call, rubber hit the road place. That is the local congregation, right? There are three expressions of the church: the local congregation, the synod, and the church wide. Now, what we are doing is we are coming up with a plan for the church wide expression. These are the things we will be doing all the time. And then we are start working with the synods on doing synodical activities. And the third phase is working with congregations. The congregations, we are hopeful and confident that with activities which they could look at, their own immediate context, and develop ministries. Now, there, this that good news there is in 1988, around 1,500 ELCA congregations said they are engaging one way or other multicultural ministry. That is a very loosely defined term, which meant anywhere from they are people worship from other ethnic communities other than their predominantly their own, or they have a daycare center where many kids come, or they have a food pantry program, or anything they thought, you know, so everybody put that together. So that's what happens when you don't define things for the church.